Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
There is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand of the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath a self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air. The sin screams louder than the finest ever dare.
They'll fill your place
with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow.
Inject your blood with toxic waste.
The world is all that bears if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Oh.
Welcome. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live from the Vaccine Rights Studios in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. We are here every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, 4 Mountain, and 3 Pacific times. And we are simulcasting. We are going out to Freedomizer Radio at freedomizerradio.com and Homeopathy World Community Radio. And the web address there is homeopathyworldcommunity.com. All of those words spelled out. We have a special guest with us here today, Rich Roberts from the Pandemic Response Project. Rich is going to share some current and recent vaccine news items from around the U.S. and the world. And we'll get to Rich in just a second there. Let's see. Any other announcements here? This is Wednesday, June 4th, if my brain and calendar are working correctly here, 2014. And we are delighted to have you with us. Rich, how are you doing this afternoon? Wonderful to have you back.
Doing well, Alan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Great pleasure. One other quick comment here. This is a show that you can call in just to listen by phone. You can listen online live at freedomizerradio.com. And that's Freedomizer with a Z and two R's in the middle there, freedomizerradio.com. And you can call in just to listen or to ask a question or make a comment. So if the mood strikes you, feel free to do that. But in the meantime, Rich, let's just dive in because there's something on the order of 1,001 different interesting news articles from the news recently. What strikes your fancy here, Rich?
Okay, well, let's dive into some of these articles, Alan. The first article that caught my attention for tonight was a SaneVax article. And I find, they do a really good job, I think, Alan, SaneVax. I find myself reading a lot of their articles. But this one is how the FDA responds to Gardasil injuries. This is a somewhat heartbreaking article about the correspondence between Kim and Chad Robinson, whose daughter became very ill after receiving only one injection of Gardasil. And they have attempted to correspond with the FDA about this. And it's, you know, it's just so typical about the way that, you know, our government officials blow off people and just sort of try to, smooth over everything with empty talk. But it's an excellent article to read.
Well, what are some of the highlights there? Because I actually heard someone talking about a similar story recently, and the gist was the same, that they basically are not getting any sympathy from the FDA, and, you know, surprise, surprise. I mean, we should be able to have that. You know, I'll just mention briefly, I read something a while back. There was a medical doctor who was a researcher working for the FDA, and he became a whistleblower, and he had reported having had a conversation with his boss at the FDA, and he said something, his boss said something about their client, the FDA's client, being the pharmaceutical company, and the doctor researcher very politely corrected his boss, "You mean the American people?" And he says, "No, I mean the pharmaceutical industry." I don't know how much more blatant you can get than that. People sometimes joke about how agencies are working for private industry and not for the public, which is what they should be doing and what they pretend to be doing. But there's just so much information that has come out over the years, and you're going to talk about the FDA. I just wanted to sort of set the stage there with this is not speculation. Now, this comes from inside the FDA itself, that they consider, or at least this one particular boss, supervisor, decision maker, was very clear and adamant about his position that the FDA serves the industry and not the people. So with that as the backdrop, I think nothing else you say, and having already sort of spilled the beans in general here with the article, there's not much else you can say that's going to surprise us, just maybe disgust us a little further. But at the risk of that being the outcome, please share a little bit of the details of that, Rich.
Well, that is the gist of it, Alan. You know, these agencies, they're representing big business and not the people. And the revolving door, you know, between the pharmaceutical industry and the FDA and companies like Monsanto, you know, it's no wonder that they feel like their duty is to represent, you know, business interests. So that's a huge conflict of interest. And the FDA says things to these poor folks like, you know, the manufacturer of the vaccines has committed to us to perform additional studies of safety of Gardasil. And, of course, that's the last person, you know, that we really want performing those studies is the manufacturer who's profiting off of it. And they kind of say lame things like, you know, we'll monitor the vaccine adverse event reporting system, you know, to detect problems. And it's just, you know, kind of empty speak. And, you know, to their credit, the Robinsons have pointed out, you know, to the FDA some fairly startling statistics. I don't know what it is about Gardasil. That vaccine seems to be potentially deadly. But, you know, they're pointing out that within VARS, for instance, 24% of all the life-threatening events are from Gardasil. And so this really seems to be one of the hottest vaccines that's sort of come along and just kind of causing all kinds of havoc, Alan.
Well, let me give you another piece of information that, adds to the explanation of why the pharmaceutical industry and the FDA are behaving this way. Doesn't one iota offer a single iota of excuse? But to help us understand this a little bit, I have in front of me a list of the top 10 selling vaccines internationally in 2013. And number two on that list is Merck's Gardasil vaccine. Now, we've seen this vaccine heavily pushed in recent years. And, you know, I had a gal on the phone on another show last night, an immunologist, Dr. Tetiana Obakanich, author of a book called Vaccine Illusion, which I recommend people go look up and buy and get a copy. It's written by an immunologist. She's an expert in this, and she ended up becoming kind of having to leave the mainstream world when she found out that there wasn't any science in the field of immunology supporting vaccines. And when she tried to discuss this with her peers, nobody disputed or refuted what she said, but they basically rejected her. How dare you challenge the status quo? And be quiet. Don't let anybody hear you say that, at least here in the U.S. We've met with anything but a scientific response to an absolutely legitimate, in fact, critical scientific question. Anyway, her book, Vaccine Illusions, available Amazon.com, and she knows the science, but she also communicates it in a very accessible way that even lay people like me can understand it. So I think I do recommend that. But she's talking about how the Gardasil vaccine, they keep calling it a cancer vaccine. It's not a cancer vaccine. There aren't any studies, and it's not even feasible, according to Dr. Obakanich, to do studies because most people who get cervical cancer are women in their 50s and up. So you'd have to do studies over a period of decades, which the vaccine, of course, hasn't been around that long. They claim that it prevents cancer because it can generate antibodies to the certain strains of the HPV virus. All kinds of flaws in the science here and the way this is promoted, and a severe absence of any objective or genuine study of the adverse effects. I mean, in the last couple of weeks, I've talked with a couple of mothers whose daughters were killed by the Gardasil vaccine or died from the Gardasil vaccine. This stuff is gut-wrenching and heartbreaking, Rich. It's just, I can't find words to express how horrible this is. And then when you add insult to injury to that, when somebody reaches out to the government. Now, the things that you said, Rich, they didn't so much sound wrong or bad as they did horribly inadequate. Somebody died. Well, you know, somebody got permanently disabled. We'll look a little further into it. No, I mean, how can they possibly license a vaccine that has this kind of track record? I don't understand. You know, like, I'm wondering why anybody would write to the FDA in the first place. What were they hoping for, looking for, or expecting? Because the FDA's role in all of this, as I understand it anyway, would be that they're the ones who license the vaccine. No vaccine can be administered to anyone in the United States unless the vaccine is first licensed by the FDA. And presumably, when a vaccine is licensed, it's been certified as safe and effective. But this would not be by any means the first or an isolated instance when the FDA has licensed something that really was not safe or effective. And so the politics is thick and heavy here, and the more than $2 billion in sales internationally from the Gardasil vaccine last year, I tell you, when you get into that level of money, I mean, I can't even relate to a million, and a billion is 1,000 of those. It's, you know, money talks, and money does funny things to people's minds and perceptions, where there's that kind of money involved, reality goes out the window and everything's about, you know, preserving that money and expanding it. So anyway, let's keep going here, Rich, because we got tons of other things to talk about here, I'm sure.
Well, this is another article that I really appreciated, Alan. This one was from VacTruth.com, and this was by Christina England. And the title is, "This Misdirection Tactic is Used by Mainstream Media When Reporting Outbreaks." And this is one that I think all parents who do not vaccinate agonize over, because every time the media reports, you know, an outbreak of mumps or measles, their misdirection technique is that they always blame it on the unvaccinated children. And that's just so out of line. But it causes us agony because, you know, we see ourselves been blamed, and people are buying into that the reason these diseases exist is because of people who do not vaccinate.
You know, I want to throw in some information here. The CDC's own website tells us that, and these are very conservative figures, but let's just go ahead and use their figures, because you can find much higher figures in the peer-reviewed published research. But they say 5 to 15% of people who get vaccines are not protected. Those people do not develop immunity. And Dr. Obakanich, again, to go back to her, points out that even when they do generate the level of antibody response necessary to be considered protective, that that antibody level wanes over time in many people, if not most people. So, but 5 to 15% of people are not immune even when they get vaccines. And according to the CDC, on the CDC website, that's why most outbreaks start in vaccinated children. So they admit this, unless they've taken it down very recently. And furthermore, they say that unvaccinated people can get – now, everybody pay close attention, because this will be something that most of you have never heard of. Unvaccinated people can get this rare condition known as natural immunity. Now, I'll say it again slowly. You want to write this down and go look it up later so you can see what it is. Natural immunity. But the not so funny point, because this was a new one for me when I first looked this up, I don't know, a year or two ago. And you can get natural immunity without even developing symptoms. So you do not have to be sick or get sick or get a vaccine to be immune from a disease, to have the antibodies. Isn't that amazing? So first of all, you cannot determine somebody's immune status by their vaccination status. When you're talking about any given individual, you may or may not be immune whether or not you're vaccinated. So to immediately say, well, it's got to be those unvaccinated people, that's wrong. Second of all, the CDC actually disagrees with that on their own website. They say most outbreaks start in vaccinated kids. And I hear this anecdotally, you know, that's not science, but it certainly is something to consider all the time, where people say, hey, yeah, there was an outbreak in my kid's classroom and my kid's not vaccinated and he didn't get sick, but it was some vaccinated kid. You know, I hear that anecdotally over and over again from people around the country, different variations of that same theme. But here's the biggest one for me, Rich. You go back and look at the official statistics, and I tell you what, if you go to the Pandemic Response Project website, and it's those three words spelled out, pandemicresponseproject.com, and go to the resources page, and there's a link there to some graphs. And you look back, and these are official government statistics over the last 100 years or more. And the vast majority of infectious disease decline in the 1900s preceded the introduction of vaccines. 90 to 95% decline for most diseases preceded the introduction of vaccines. And then, of course, there were many diseases, several that they never had a vaccine for at all, that declined at the same time. So to suggest that the absence of a vaccine is going to take us back to a condition that went away before we had vaccines is preposterous, unless there's something going on as a byproduct of mass immunization that is rendering us more susceptible, either by weakening our immune systems, and there's an argument for that, or by causing mutant strains of these diseases. For example, with pertussis, now it turns out that many of the cases that are being recorded as pertussis, if they look more closely, if they take a specimen and look at it scientifically, they find out it's parapertussis, which is something that is not protected by a vaccine. And some medical experts have proposed that it's the widespread vaccination against pertussis that has caused or created the condition in which mutant strains or other similar type diseases are now, what would be the word here, becoming more and more common and more widespread, and there aren't vaccines to protect against them. So we may actually be... widespread use of vaccines may actually be counterproductive.
Right, and we certainly see that with antibiotics too, Alan. We're breeding these, you know, horrible diseases now that are much more difficult to fight. And even, you know, a close parallel within agriculture, you know, we sprayed so much of this Roundup everywhere that now we have these super weeds and nothing will kill them. And so it is kind of bad logic, you know, it's short-sighted logic. And we are kind of creating these monsters with our sort of misguided technology. And thank you for bringing up that stat. I never, you know, get tired of hearing that fact that you know, all these diseases we vaccinate against were on the decline by a factor of, you know, 90% before vaccines, or that some of these diseases completely were eliminated in countries where we didn't vaccinate. And I think that one fact is really the smoking gun. That is one of the best arguments that we have against vaccination.
Yep. The best one I see for it is if you have stock in pharmaceutical companies and a lack of compassion and empathy for your fellow human beings, because you can make a lot of money in the pharmaceutical industry right now on vaccines. You know, clearly a multi-billion-dollar industry internationally. But what else we got, Rich? Here, let's keep pushing, because there's just a lot of fascinating stuff.
Let's keep on. This is a related article. You know, we're talking about this misdirection tactic of every time there's an outbreak, you know, the media wants to blame it on people who do not vaccinate. This is actually local news channel that ran an article, and it's entitled 1,000 Vaccination Waivers in Kent County, and this was in Michigan. And so there was a sense of alarm that, you know, more people in this county are, you know, filing for vaccination waivers based on philosophical or religious reasons or medical issues. And then, you know, kind of the summary of you know, the situation by this media outlet is that decision on, you know, those parents deciding not to vaccinate can hurt schools, because if less than 95% of the kids are vaccinated, then the state will withhold funds from the schools. So, you know, it's not only, you know, theoretically they're saying not only is it the fault of parents who don't vaccinate that these diseases are back, but we're also hurting schools, Alan, because they can't get their funding. So these are absurd kinds of, you know, arguments.
Let me jump in here real quick, Rich, and excuse me for cutting you off, but I got to set the record straight here.
Okay.
I mean, the risk of injury or death from a vaccine is minuscule compared to losing a few dollars for education here. So I just wanted to make sure we put this in proper perspective. You know, the insanity here, Rich, I just really wanted to, you know, stop you for just a moment here and just really underscore the insanity here. You know, we don't even require our 18-year-olds to serve in the military, to risk their lives potentially for their country, but we require newborn babies to risk their lives with a hepatitis B vaccine for a disease that they're at no risk of contracting or spreading unless the newborn child is a sexually promiscuous intravenous drug user. And I'll be honest with you, I've asked a lot of people, and I can count the number of newborn sexually promiscuous intravenous drug users that I've seen or heard of on one hand. In fact, I can count it on no hand. Let's just be real blunt about this. So it's crazy, Rich. I have to keep pinching myself, saying this is just a bad dream, right? I'm going to wake up from this, and everything will be normal and sane, right? But, boy, this is one extended nightmare. Anyway, please forgive the interruption, and please do go on, Rich.
Well, that, you know, that's the gist of that article, and it's just another layer of the manipulation and the pressure that is put on parents through the school system. You know, they're going to get the school system after people to, you know, push up these vaccination rates sky high, or else, you know, government funding is tied to these things. And, you know, that in itself is a horrible conflict of interest. But I thought that dovetails nicely, you know, with the kind of misdirection about non-vaxxers being responsible for disease. I mean, that just kind of philosophically falls flat for me. But let's take a look at another article here, Alan.
Let me pause just for one brief comment. I just want to say that those kinds of arguments really underscore either the complete ignorance about the real costs, the non-financial costs, meaning the harm, which of course has a financial component that's huge, $100 million a year paid out by the federal government for vaccine injury and death. But it either underscores a complete ignorance of that generally in the media or the public at large, or a deliberate avoidance of that on the part of the mainstream media because they are owned or controlled by the pharmaceutical industry. And I hate to sound overly cynical, but more of my eggs are in the second basket there than the first one, based on what I've seen over the last 20 years of my own ongoing investigation of the issue. But please go on, Rich.
Okay, well, let's take a look at something different here. Now, this one is really scary. This one comes from Natural News, and this is by Mike Adams, which is another guy. I really like Mike Adams and following his stuff, and he's made a great alliance with Alex Jones with InfoWars. But this article is called White House Admits Staging Fake Vaccination Operation to Gather DNA from the Public. So that title kind of says it all, Alan. That's pretty freaky.
Okay, we'll just move on here because that really sums it up nicely. You know, let's drill down for just a minute or two here, and we've got a couple minutes or so, two or three, before we need to take a break here. But White House admits staging fake vaccination operation to gather DNA from the public. Now, is this a reference to what they were doing in looking for Osama bin Laden, or is I think what were they in Pakistan where they were doing this?
That is correct, Alan. The CIA was running a phony vaccination program, and they were attempting to obtain DNA evidence in that area to see if they could find members of bin Laden's family that they thought were holed up there. And so this is all, you know, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is a fact. And so this was really going on, and it really shows you, you know, how far, how far this stuff can go, how out of hand that this can become, you know.
I just didn't realize the reach of the NSA went that far, but okay. But it's a real interesting point, and I just want to, in defense of our government, I just want to comment that they've promised never to do this again, so we don't have to worry about it, fortunately, because some radical in there got out of control, but they're all back in line now. We can trust them all again, and everything's rosy and peachy, and life can go on, and let's, bring out the bunnies and flowers and all. So, but it is, you know, I can see the fascinating strategical aspect. You know, you're in a foreign country, third world country, Pakistan, you're looking for this alleged terrorist. Let's not get off on the sidetrack about whether or not he really is and who set him up in the first place and all of that, or we'll be talking about our government's dirty laundry for the rest of the show here. But nonetheless, it's kind of interesting because I think the theory is here, if you're going to administer a vaccine, how are you getting DNA? You're going to have to, after administering the vaccine, pull that plunger the other way before you take the needle out, you know, and get some blood. So what are they doing? Just taking blood from everybody in a, 50-mile radius and testing it all? I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you think there's any logic to that? I mean, does that seem like a reasonable way to try to track someone down? Does that sound like just like an excuse for the, the whole thing is fake and just an excuse for the vaccination campaign? Or what's going on with this? And I know you can only speculate beyond a certain point, but
I don't think it's logical, Alan. I mean, how could that be, proper intelligence activity. Why would they need to do that? I mean, they're staging a phony kind of public health activity to secretly harvest DNA from the public. All this in an attempt to assassinate a person. And I just don't know how that flies. It seems like to me that, you know, and I speculate, it just seems like sometimes they do these things because it's sort of an attempt to normalize them in our minds. It's like, oh, yeah, well, we had to, you know, take DNA under the guise of a fake vaccine program, you know, to get Osama bin Laden. But that was important, you know, because he was such a bad guy. And somehow that's supposed to soften up in our minds that, oh, well, that's okay. You know, it's okay if the government is going to be taking DNA from people. You know, that's legitimate. So I think a lot of times it is an effort, a very evil effort, to normalize what is sort of, you know, should never be acceptable or normal.
Interesting point, because, you know, when Mike Adams in Natural News picks something up, there's a good chance, not always, but a good chance it's going to be sensationalized a little bit. If this same information were released in mainstream media, it would have a different spin on it, I'm sure, and would be more apt to be presented in a way that people, at least the more naive among us, would be conditioned by that in some manner to be, oh, that they do that, that's normal, that must be okay.
Yeah.
You know, I remember somebody once saying to me, well, most doctors think vaccines are okay, so they're okay. It was, to that person, was really as simple as that. Well, the media says it's okay, so it's okay. There are, gosh, it's sort of scary, isn't it, that people who think that way and they do so, I don't necessarily mean this as a put-down to anyone else. I certainly held mainstream views on vaccines myself years ago. So, I understand what it's like to be on the other side of the fence. I used to think anybody who didn't vaccinate was an idiot. I know better now, but, you're not an idiot just because you think that way. You just haven't gotten on the learning curve yet. So,
right.
But... I don't know, Rich. Well, listen, let me go ahead and take a break. We'll take care of that, and then we'll be right back. You've been listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and our special once a month, because I can't talk him into coming on more, guest Rich Roberts for the Pandemic Response Project. This has been a stressful day for me, so I'm just in sort of a loony attitude here this evening, I reckon. But anyway, we'll be back in just a little bit, folks. We have lots more to talk about. Please stay with us, and we'll see you on the other side of break here in just a little bit.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals, a political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
My name is Dr. Eric Norman. I have studied vitamin B12 deficiency for over 35 years. I have developed the urinary MMA test to detect tissue B12 deficiency early, allowing treatment and prevention of permanent disability. B12 deficiency can cause anemia, but also neurologic problems such as spinal cord degeneration, paranoia, and dementia. B12 is found only in animal sources, so vegetarians become deficient. As people age, they may not produce enough stomach acid or intrinsic factor protein for absorption of B12 and become deficient. Up to 10% of seniors may have a normal serum B12 level, but a tissue B12 deficiency causing a 3 times greater risk for heart attack, stroke, or Alzheimer's. For more information, visit B12.com.
Hi, I have a question for you. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you want a company that provides good quality ingredients and does not use artificial sweeteners? Look no further. Genesis Pure has a complete lineup of health and wellness, sports performance, and superfruit juices like noni and mangosteen that are pure, wild harvested with no binders and fillers. The philosophy is simple. Cleanse the body of toxins, balance the body's pH and hormones, and build the body nutritionally. Every race has a starting line, and yours is Cleanse, Balance, Build. Sign up for at least a 25% discount and include auto ship of at least one product to start building up 20% back in points for free products. It's a win-win. Help fund our operation while you fund your body nutritionally. Start your journey at genesispure.com/freedomizerhealth. Again, that is genesispure.com/freedomizerhealth.
Globe Sound and Consciousness Institute presents the Globe Sound Healing Conference. With the full spectrum of the most well-known and respected pioneers, researchers, therapists, doctors, and musicians in the field. The conference will focus on acoustic instruments, sound and medicine, new sound technologies, sacred geometry, and raising consciousness with sound. The conference is being held September 26th to the 29th in the San Francisco Bay Area. Call 415-777-2486 or go to globesoundhealingconference.com. That's globesoundhealingconference.com.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Well, we are back. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips and special guest today, Rich Roberts from the Pandemic Response Project. And by the way, the articles that we're talking about today are linked from the Pandemic Response Project website. That's pandemicresponseproject.com. And just go to the news link at the top right of any page on that site, and that'll take you to these and many, many other articles related to vaccine legal and political and medical issues. So, Rich, where are we? Shall we plug on away here?
Sure. Let's keep moving forward tonight, Alan. The next article that caught my attention for tonight is from the Health Impact News Daily, and this is an article written by Michael Belkin called The Vaccine Bubble. And he coined that terminology. I really like that terminology, Alan. And that's, I think that's kind of what we need is that sort of, ability to simplify things down into concepts and then kind of create reality here in the direction we want it. But Michael Belkin, he lost a child after receiving the hepatitis B vaccine. So that's heartbreaking. He's a gifted musician, and he writes music warning people about the dangers of vaccines. And when I read that, I kind of thought of you, Alan. I was like, hey, that sounds like somebody else I know. but he coined this terminology, the vaccine bubble, and I love it, And he's just sort of pointing out, that this whole market is just propped up by unsound economics. Basically we have a government intervening that's going to prevent the market from, being based on true consumer demand. And instead, it's just based on compulsion. And so I hope that, this word, that this terminology that Michael has coined, the vaccine bubble, will be correct. Because, we've seen the dot-com bubble, and we've seen the real estate bubble, and I think we're going to see the derivatives bubble. And it only seems that, the vaccine is a bubble, and this has to eventually fail. And perhaps along with it, the entire healthcare kind of system, the whole big pharma system, Alan.
Rich, I saw a fascinating distinction as made on a cable TV show somewhere in the last couple of weeks where they're talking about levels of wealth, and that when you reach the level of being a millionaire, you have enough money at that point to play with your money. You buy the plane and the boat and, you know, the yacht and the house and do the vacations and travel and all those different things. When you reach the level of billionaire, you're in a whole different order of magnitude. And at that level, you have the ability to buy control of political systems, of businesses. You're controlling entire societies at that point. And what we've got going on here in the vaccine arena, Rich, is that, or let me broaden it a little bit to the pharmaceutical industry in the broader sense first. There are a lot of these so-called blockbuster drugs, drugs that bring in gross a billion or more dollars a year. Blockbuster drugs that either the patents have run out, which means now they're going to have competition from generic drugs that are going to be offered far less expensive, and or the patents are about to run out. And so the pharmaceutical industry, the companies have been looking for other baskets to put their eggs in, so to speak, to go back to that same worn-out metaphor. And they have spent decades now at this point setting up the vaccine industry and business, setting up the groundwork here. So we have a situation, for example, back in 1986, they passed the Childhood Vaccine Injury Act that frees the pharmaceutical companies from liability from the injury or death caused by their vaccines, because they were being put out of business by the lawsuits from the parents of the children who were injured and killed by their products. And so they had to do something, and they got that set up. So after working for decades in the state and federal legislatures, what we have currently is a system, Rich, where the federal government spends billions of dollars subsidizing vaccine research and development. Here, you guys are, you know, billions is not enough profit each year, so let us pay you to develop vaccines so you can make even more billions of profit, and here, it's free. You know, three or four years ago, they built a brand new pandemic flu vaccine production plant here in North Carolina, cost something on the order of $1 billion to build that, and the federal government paid almost half of the cost. It was like $450 million. Here, we'll just give that to you, just as one one case in point. So the federal government pays for the vaccines to be developed. The federal and state governments purchase vaccines. If you can't afford vaccines, you go to your local free clinic and they'll give you the vaccines, because somebody's going to buy it, either you or your local or state government. The state and federal governments, of course, mandate vaccines for everything from school to being in the military to immigration to more and more states are requiring flu shots for healthcare workers, and just, you know, more and more mandates. And I haven't looked real recently, Rich, but a few months ago there were over 100 vaccine bills pending in over 30 states. Enormously an aggressive legislative issue throughout the country, in states around the country. And most of those bills, if passed, are going to do things like require even more vaccines for children, because we all know that the 60, whatever it is, vaccines they get now is just not enough. And new mandates for categories of adults who've never been mandated to get vaccines in the past, and let children consent to vaccines, and let pharmacists administer vaccines, and so forth and so on. And there's a few of them that are trying to bills that, if they get passed, will give people a little more opportunity and a little more right to refuse vaccines. But boy, that is a small minority in the total scheme there. So it's just very expensive. The government pays for the vaccines, the government supports the development and research, the government purchases the vaccines. Then if anyone is hurt or killed, and among those people or their families, if they're lucky enough to be among the roughly 25-26% of those who get compensation when they apply, then the federal government will pay for that. So it is got to be one of the most sealed up rigged systems on the planet, probably second to few, if any, maybe second to big oil. And, you know, I don't know, maybe the military, you know, outdoes them on this too. Although the pharmaceutical industry did recently outdo the military in terms of defrauding the federal government. Now that the pharmaceutical industry now has, you know, the military, you know, that the Pentagon, the ones who pay $500 for a hammer and they give it some other name so nobody realizes that someone, you know, sold a hammer for $500. You know, those people have actually now been outdone by the pharmaceutical industry, and there have been companies that have had fines under the Federal Fraud Act. Pharmaceutical companies that have criminal fines as high as $1 billion, and yet they keep engaging in the same criminal behavior over and over again. So obviously, you know, that's either for show or it's not enough to deter them in any event from continuing the same behavior, because they're just going to get it back in a subsidy later anyway, and when
right.
purchase of vaccines and so forth. So it is a disturbingly rigged system.
Well, it's certainly worth pointing out. It's certainly worth pointing out again and again, Alan, how often Big Pharma gets hit with these criminal charges. But I think, you know, that you're right. When they're getting hit with these, you know, nobody goes to jail. Nobody's held accountable. There might be some multi-million dollar fine, but that's not enough to deter them. It has no effect on their behavior. And you're right, then the government's just going to turn and hand it back to them as a subsidy. And, you know, the whole pharmaceutical thing and vaccine thing, it reminds me of so many other kind of, you know, evil scientific things. It's like the people don't really have any interest in it, but then you see all the regulators line up and get behind it and push it and mandate it. You know, it's like the GMOs. It's like, you know, not to get off topic, like microchips. You know, who wants to be microchipped? But, you know, there's all this research and money poured into microchips, and then you start to see, you know, the government finding uses for it. They want to microchip the troops, you know. And it's just, it's like any time, you know, I see big government get behind big industry on these kind of, you know, questionable products, that's a huge red flag that, you know, we're dealing with, at best, conflict of interest, and at worst, something, you know, so dark that, you know, it's sort of hard to fathom.
Yeah, you know, but, Rich, and there was a time not long ago when I would have rolled my eyes at most of the so-called conspiracy theories, although over time some of them become conspiracy facts. You know, like, years ago I used to think Alex Jones was a fruitcake, and yet about the time of the pandemic, I started looking more closely at his vaccine information and found that he was thoroughly researched and cited all his reference, and he has been proven right over time about a lot of his so-called conspiracy theory. So we should be looking more closely at what some of these so-called conspiracy theorists are saying. I'm sure a lot of it is well-intended but ultimately incorrect. Probably a lot of it is also deliberately intended and wrong to distract or confuse. But some of these so-called conspiracy theories are worth looking at closely. Let's just put it like that, because some of them have been proven true.
Well, I agree. I think a lot of times that the game that the mainstream media or kind of just position on things they play is, if they can find one little fact wrong, they pretend that invalidates, you know, a person's research completely. Well, no, you know, nobody is perfect, and to, you know, to be interested in somebody's work does not mean that, you know, you're going to endorse every single thing that they say. And I think, you know, that's kind of the game we get caught up in a lot of times is it can be real easy to discredit somebody, you know, if all you have to do is, like, find one little kind of flaw, but that doesn't invalidate, you know, a lifetime of good research and a lot of material that is true.
Well, we got about five or six minutes here, Rich, so let's see what else we can
Okay.
Let me make a quick comment. Michael Belkin, the author of this article, Vaccine Bubble, he is a financial expert. You mentioned he's a musician, which he is, and has a band called The Refusers and a website called TheRefusers.com. He's a good source for information about vaccines and for music about the vaccine issue as well, as you pointed out. But his day job is he's a financial expert. And so this article he's written is very well written. the information, we don't have time to go in detail here, but I definitely recommend this article. I've read it myself, and I found it very enlightening. So it's from healthimpactnews.com, but it's also linked from the Pandemic Response Project news page. So
just,
what else we got,
one
Rich?
More. Well, just one more point. I think that Michael does a great job. He points out here very astutely that informed consent is the backbone of medical ethics. And I couldn't agree with any statement more, Alan, and I think that's a good way of putting it. And that's not
this
what
nice
we have
summary.
Right now.
Nice summary. No, it sure isn't. We have pharmaceutical profits at all costs and huge costs.
All right. Well, let's look at another article. This is from Cheryl Atkinson, Untouchable Subjects, Fearless Reporting, and she has developed a reputation for, you know, at least going out on the, you know, out on the edge and reporting things that, you know, have gotten her into trouble. So I like to keep up with her, too. But this article is called The Search for Safer Vaccines. And this is an interesting subject, too, Alan. And the article is basically pointing out that, you know, even bringing up the notion of making vaccines safer will get people, you know, kicked out of the mainstream or ridiculed. It's like, you know, not, you know, how dare you even kind of question that Dorothy was sort of doing, you know, the Green R vaccines campaigns. You know, on the one hand, I do agree, you know, if you could get mercury or thimerosal removed from vaccines, that's a step in the right direction. But, you know, I just wonder, is that really too little, too late? Is there really a way to green or make a vaccine safe? And is this really potentially a way that the debate could be limited and we could be smoothed over with less than an ideal kind of solution to these problems?
You know, it's really a fair question, Rich. You know, and I think you're going to find people within the broader alternative vaccine community who will fall on different sides of the answer there. But on the one hand, for example, there is research that was deliberately covered up by the CDC, by the way, and we have proof of this because of information obtained from the Freedom of Information Act. But without getting into a side issue there, study information that showed when they took the mercury out of vaccines, the autism rates went down over a period of years. And they were looking at children in Denmark. It was a study, I think, around 2002, 2003, and they referred to it informally as the Danish study. So the evidence is out there, and that suggests that, yes, even if we did nothing but take the mercury out of vaccines, we would be a step forward, which is probably better than no step at all. But the focus, on the other hand, the focus on mercury that has been given, or that has been given mercury in vaccines, has to some degree taken away from the larger reality that that's just one of many different toxic ingredients in the vaccines. And there were studies published in the last couple of years, at least two or three that I'm aware of, that looked at the aluminum adjuvants in vaccines as a possible cause or contributing factor to autism. That research, of course, is deemed dead on arrival because it doesn't come out saying what the pharmaceutical industry wants it to say. So everybody pretends like it either doesn't exist or it's obviously a bad study or whatever. But no, it went through the same peer review processes as other studies. You know, the information's out there. And then if you just look at the CDC lists on its website vaccine incipients, which are the ingredients, and they're just all kinds of toxic ingredients in the vaccines, and who knows what combination and what amounts of what ingredients has what adverse effects. These kinds of things have just not been studied in any serious or in-depth way for us to have clear answers. Well, Rich, we got about a minute and a half here. I want to pass the ball back to you to anything else you want to say about this article or anything else. And I love Cheryl Atkinson. I'm a big fan of hers. She was, you know, with the big guys, what was it, CBS or somebody like that, and she chose integrity over hiding the truth to stay with the mainstream news, and now she's out on her own. This, you know, she's has tremendous admiration for her.
Right, that's
so
a real journalist right there. That's
yes,
a real
yes.
journalist right there, Alan.
Great summary. All right. Well, anything else in the next 30 seconds?
Well, no, I don't think I have time to get anything else in, Alan, but thanks for having me on the show. It's a pleasure as always, and thank you for, you know, doing the good work that you do to raise awareness on this issue.
Well, Rich, thank you so much for your support. It's great having you here. We'll see you next month, and if you should feel inspired and want to drop in any time before then, you're always welcome. Rich Roberts, manager with the Pandemic Response Project, and you've been listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with the vaccine rights attorney, Alan Phillips. Special guest today, Rich Roberts. We have, let's see if I can talk away another 10 seconds here, and then I'll start the closing music. This closing song is one of my songs. It's called Destiny Freedom, and it's one that I wrote, recorded, and produced, and we're going to play that to take us out right now. See you next week, folks.
Across this land, both near and far, throughout the human race, within each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand of the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath a self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air. The stench screams louder than the finest ever dare. They'll fill your place with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow. Inject your blood with toxic waste. The world is all the fairer if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our